You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're going to look ahead to Sunday's action on this edition. You'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 1:35 with Stuart Beasley, James Millman and Mick Norton in the studio. It's Doncaster and Salisbury domestically. We've also got a good card on the turf at Cork in Ireland and jumping from Downpatrick. So plenty to look forward to. My name is Mark Walton and joining me in the studio is Rory DeLaghi. How are you, Rory?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Good man. We'll start with a little bit of news. Royal Ascot is only days away, and one horse that will not be going now is Brown Panther, ruled out on Saturday morning after injuring his near foreleg, which is a bit of a blow to the race because he was going to be one of the star turns, wasn't he?
He was. He'd have had a decent chance. I know he's been around for a while now, Brown Panther, but he's looked better than ever of late, winning easily at Maidan in March, and then caught out in a slightly tactical affair at York last time out. But he's one of the few in the race who would have relished the ground. He had a reputation as a three-year-old of being, because of his pedigree, being by Scirocco as a soft ground horse, and of course his dam sire Umphawain also handled plenty of cut. But he's shown his very best form on fast ground. He was very impressive with the Curragh, for example, last autumn. So it's a disappointment for Tom Dascombe and Michael Owen et al. That he misses the race, but it blows it wide open, of course.
Yeah.
Although I say that as if he was an outstanding favourite. He wasn't, but it does look an open affair, particularly if the ground comes up fast. And I've just looked at the weather forecast for the week. We're talking not a cloud in the sky, and Wednesday and Thursday temperatures up to 25 degrees. So even if they're throwing water on the track, it's going to be riding fast.
Yeah, that's one of the key points, isn't it, for the Gold Cup? Because Forgotten Rules, who heads the market, would like a bit of rain, who's 5-2. You've got the likes of Trip to Paris, Tact of Watcher on there, also want cutting the ground, so would Clever Cookie. So it's a case of if you can find one that's going to handle the quicker surface, you might get a bit of value in there, maybe.
Absolutely. And there aren't too many who fit the bill. The one who just absolutely jumps off the page at me is Vaunt of Force, who improved markedly last autumn, ran very well at the ARC meeting, for example, came back to finish second at Ascot, before winning the Henry II at Sandown last time out from Trip to Paris. I thought he did that really nicely. He made all the running that day, but although Trip to Paris didn't get the clearest of runs and was finishing fast, I thought Vaunt of Force had a fair bit more to spare. He gives the impression he will stay beyond 2 miles as well. Of course, it's always a bit of a question mark in the Gold Cup, unless you've run in it before. Very few flat stairs have an opportunity of racing over 2.5 miles at the top level. And it's until you see them do it, you're never quite sure how they're going to cope with it. But if Vaunt of Force does promise to be suited by it, he doesn't need to make the running, but he's well suited by being ridden forwardly. Richard Hughes, who rode him at Sandown, is already in the plate. We saw him in decent form. Well, we saw both aspects of Richard Hughes last night in the studio. I thought he was caught napping in an early race at Goodwood, but then he rode a double, pulling it out of the fire both times. And so when Hughesy is on form, he's a hard man to get past, and winning a Gold Cup in his final season as a jockey would be hugely important to him, so he'd be thoroughly fired up for this. And while he was a big price a couple of weeks ago, he's been well backed since, and I can see him going off 4 or 5 to 1 on the day.
All right, so that's the Ascot Gold Cup then. Anything else you're really looking forward to next week?
I'm always looking forward to the opener. I like the fact that a couple of our really big festivals, Cheltenham Festival, starts with a terrific race in the Supreme Novice Hurdle, and Royal Ascot starts with the Queen Anne, which was upgraded a fair number of years ago now and has turned into one of the races of the meeting, and that promises to be a tremendous clash between Solo and Able Friend. I think Solo will take a hell of a lot of beating, to be honest. You're not going to get massive prices about either of that pair, but it's a really intriguing clash between two different racing jurisdictions, and I don't think there's going to be a local challenger good enough to take those two on. We don't really know how Able Friend's going to cope with racing in the UK, but it'll be no issue for Solo, who looks an absolute monster.
Yeah, very impressive Solo so far. 6-4 at the top of the market. Able Friend 9-4. I must admit, I don't really know too much about Able Friend. Does it a lot of racing and charting, doesn't it, and stuff like
yes,
that? So.
Yes, we haven't seen an awful lot. Well, it's not difficult to find coverage of Hong Kong racing if you go onto YouTube, for example. He has a huge reputation. His race record speaks for itself. He's an absolute monster in the flesh, apparently. Huge, strapping individual, but handles fast ground very well. And it'll just be interesting to see the pair of them walking around the paddock, to be perfectly yeah. honest. Both impressive looking individuals, and they bring tremendously high class form to the table. And it's always a big coup for Ascot to get the big foreign horses to turn up at all. And of course, it's Nick Smith at Ascot has always been travelling around the world trying to get horses over from Hong Kong, from Australia, from the States, etc. And sometimes we've seen horses coming over not quite for the sake of it, but maybe not being major players, but more and more Royal Ascot's become an international event, and that's hugely important for racing here, I think.
Yeah, it has become, like I say, an international event. If you look at California Chrome coming over this year, we've had Wesley Ward's runners in the past, you've had Australian runners come over, and real high-profile ones as well.
We've had some of the best horses from the US in recent years, and that's, I mean, it makes sense for the two-year-olds. American two-year-olds tend to be very far forward yeah. compared to ours, so Wesley Ward has taken advantage of that. Several times, but to get the likes of California Chrome, one of the great poster boys of the last decade in the States, to race at Royal Ascot is a massive coup. Whether we'll see the very best of California Chrome, of course, is another matter altogether. He wouldn't be on paper an ideal sort to be racing at the Royal Meeting, but you know it's important for his connections to be seen, to be taking their chance, and it'll be great to see him run a big race as well.
Mm. We've got all that to look forward to next week, but let's focus on matters a little bit close to hand. Rory's got four races for us on Sunday, and we'll get his thoughts next.
William Hill Racing Radio. It's everything to give you the inside track.
We're going to look at the action at both domestic meetings, starting at Salisbury in the 145. This is a Class 4 handicap over a mile and a half. We've got a field of nine here, Rory. Who would you side with in there?
This was a tricky one for me. I think the key to this race is that most of the runners want to make the running. And one or two of these arguably flattered by getting the run of things in small fields last time out. Elysian Fields has won her last four, three of them at Bath. She showed that she handles very fast ground, which is crucial. The chances are that the ground will be close to firm at Salisbury. I know they're watering the track today after not getting an awful lot of rain. I think they had 4 mils of rain or maybe even less than that. So they're trying to take a bit of the sting out of the ground, but it will be riding good to firm. And the ability to handle that ground is important. So Elysian Fields is the obvious starting point, having won by 3.5 lengths at Bath last time out from Chesil Beach. She did get the run of the things from the front. She was able to dominate that race under a £5 claimer. The race time wasn't particularly strong. In her favour, she was going away again at the finish, so she wasn't all out to hold on, and she might improve again. But she does need to, because she started this winning run in handicaps off a mark of 65. She's up to 83 now, and this is a much tougher task than she's had. Carrar, the top weight, is out of the race now. He's a non-runner. That would have been interesting, starting out for William Haggis. But you've also got the likes of Starwatch, Interior Minister, Tower Power, Grey Gem, all of whom led last time out. So there's no easy lead for Elysian Fields. There's no easy lead for those others either, it appears. And the one horse who wouldn't mind a strong pace and sitting off it is Sunny Future. He's thoroughly exposed at the age of 9, but most of his opponents are going up in the handicap. And although he's higher now than he was when winning at Bath himself in May, he's only £2 higher. One off a mark of 76 at Bath. He'd previously won there off a mark of 74. So he's got a similar profile to Elysian Fields, having got a couple of wins in small fields at Bath. But where Elysian Fields has gone up £12 for two wins there, he's only gone up £4. He handles conditions. He runs well at the track. He was a good fourth in a stronger race than this last time out on firm ground. Handles any type of going. Does handle fast ground very well. And I just think he might get the run of things. He'll sit in last place. And despite a smallish field, I think they're going to go fast up front. So he should get things run his way. Tower Power is a horse that I liked a lot last season, but he does have two ways of running. He can sulk badly in his races, so he's got three or four runs where he's finished right out the back and several runs where he's run really well. He ran well at Redcar last time out, made most of the running that day, caught late on by Eutropius, finished 2 lengths clear of the third. But again, that wasn't... that was a race that probably suited those up with the pace. The pair who he split have both run poorly since, so that's a bit of a worry for him, as his tendency to follow a good run with a bad one.
Yeah, and the fact that they put the cheek pieces on last time and they've taken them back off again.
They ran very well in the cheek pieces. You'd think they'd stick with them, but maybe Ishmael Mohammed has decided that the best way of getting him to run to form is keep changing things around.
Maybe so, yeah. Are you with Sunny Future then?
Sunny Future will be the tip, yeah.
Yeah. On to the 4 o'clock at Salisbury Next. This is the big race of the afternoon there. It's the Cathedral Stakes, which is a listed race over 6 furlongs. It's for 3-year-olds and older. Field of 11 here. And I was quite interested in markers down the bottom there, because the run at Haydock last time, that form looks pretty strong.
It does. Marquez is the improving 3-year-old in the race, if you like. Plenty of these fairly exposed. The race that he ran in the Sandy Lane Stakes might turn out to be slightly muddling form, but it was full of improving types, including Lamato, who's been talked up to the skies this season as a potential champion sprinter. Lamato was only second to Ade in the end, but Marquez ran the race of his life to finish fourth. He'd already been behind Lamato early in the season. He's suited by fastish ground. My worry with the Haydock run is it was very false going that day, and I'm not sure. While it was full of good horses, I'm not sure they finished in the right order, if you see what I mean. But he does have to be respected. It's no easy task for a 3-year-old taking on older horses at this trip, though. And I will just pass him over. Although I suspect Absolutely So will be favourite for this. And he's got extremely strong claims on his best form, but he doesn't want fast ground. I would want to be against him if he turned out here. There is a possibility Absolutely So will be taken out if Andrew Baldy decides the ground is too quick for him. He's got the best form in the race, but it's all come on good or softer ground, and I don't think he's going to get that tomorrow. Those who will appreciate the conditions... Outback Traveller, Will. He's a difficult horse to get a handle on. He was one of the easiest winners of last season at Ascot in a 7-furlong handicap in October. Won what looked a competitive race by a long way and in an exceptionally quick time. But that's a big standout effort from him. He hasn't followed it up since. He did run well in his reappearance at Kempton, but then followed it back over the same course and distance as he was successful over with a down-the-field run in the Victoria Cup last time out. He needs to bounce back from that. And I'm not sure what to make of him on this track. He's shown decent form on the poly track. A lot of horses with poly track form run well at Ascot, but don't necessarily go well at other turf courses. So that's a little bit of a concern. Rouean should run well. He was fifth in a decent listed race at Windsor last time out behind Tropics. And behind him that day was Minalisa. She might be the most interesting one of all in the race. She finished a respectable fourth in this last year. And a repeat of that wouldn't be good enough to win, but she improved markedly afterwards. She was well beaten in her return, again in the same Windsor race. She finished ninth in that last year before improving to finish fourth in this. She then went on to win in Lister Company at Nace on her next start, producing a much improved effort. And she ran a tremendous race in the Air Gold Cup. She was drawn on the wrong side of the track but finished second. The three around her were all drawn high. She was drawn two. So that was a tremendous performance. She just looks like she's taken off in form terms. She would have needed the run at Windsor as she did last year. She will step up on that, and I think she's a big player here.
Okay, Minalisa are a big player in the 4 o'clock at Salisbury. Moving to Doncaster for their 4:15 next, and this is a Class 3 handicap over 6 furlongs. It's for 3-year-olds and older, and 12 of them to go to post here, Rory, an open field this.
It does look a very open race at first glance. Jimmy Styles, who heads the weights, is a course and distance winner here in the past and has been an absolute star for Clive Cox, but he's an 11-year-old now, and it'll be somewhat of a surprise to see him. I think the most important piece of form here is the race in which Eccleston won at Haydock last time out, back on the 23rd of May. That looked very competitive. He had Cagnari back and forth, but I think Cagnari might reverse form. I think these are the two main players in the race. Eccleston did well to win. He's got a rather mixed record, and he's not guaranteed to back that up if his previous record is any guide, but he may just have matured as a 4-year-old. But Cagnari did a little bit too much towards the head of affairs that day and finishing fourth. That was backing up his effort when winning easily at Leicester on his previous start with Ryan Moore riding. He seems to have turned over a new leaf at the moment, had threatened to become disappointing before that, but all of a sudden... seems much more professional. He races off the same mark as he did at Haydock, so he's £3 better off with Eccleston. And I think he will get more of the run of things here. For a 6-furlong sprint, there is no out-and-out front runner, and Cagnari might well get the run of things from close to the front. Sammy Joe Bell takes over from Paul Hannigan. A few people might say that as a negative, but she's riding very well at the moment. She's taken time to settle down here. She looked very, very promising in her her early days as a 7-pound claimer. Took a little bit of time to find her niche when joining Richard Fahey, but her record in the last 6 months, she got a 19% strike rate, which would be right up there with the top jockeys. And her 5-pound claim on a horse who has looked a very straightforward ride in his last two starts might just be crucial. It means that essentially Cagnari is £8 better off for a fairly narrow defeat at the hands of Eccleston last time out. And if he's in the same form, bear in mind he's a course and distance winner as well, he'll be hard to beat.
Okay, Cagnari for Rory then. In the 4.15, and we finish in the 4.50 at Doncaster. This is a Class 4 handicap over a mile. And we'll start here with Derulo, Rory, who's been knocking on the door. And that second behind Interconnection at Sandown was... it looks okay with Interconnection running well at York.
Yeah, it looks even better. If you saw Interconnection run at York yesterday, he was beaten, but he almost travelled too strongly into the race, got to the front early. York can be a lonely place for a horse finding itself in front, and he got run down late on. But the front three pulled clear of the rest there, suggesting that Interconnection was still well handicapped. And Derulo did very well to get as close to him as he did at Sandown last time. That was a night in which the front runners were very hard to peg back. Derulo was the only horse to make significant ground from off the pace that day, going on strongly to finish second off a mark of 75. He's up £2 in the weights, but it's interesting that Ryan Moore retains the ride for David Ellsworth. Very much a go-to jockey for the trainer. He looks well handicapped on the basis of that Sandown form, and I think he's going to be extremely hard to beat here. Looks a very solid favourite.
Who's the main danger in there?
One of the David O'Mara runners, but given the David O'Mara's table, it's difficult to tell which one. The two of them are very similar in profile. They both got the same handicap mark, both four-year-olds carrying 9 stone 5. That's Thornaby Nash and Making the Rules. They both come here off thoroughly respectable runs last time out. Thornaby Nash looks just about the more straightforward of them. Making the Rules run a slightly strange race when fourth at Redcar over a mile and a quarter on his latest start. Oddly enough, given he's proven over 6 furlongs, he was outpaced over the mile and a quarter last time out before running on late in the day. And Thornaby Nash, who'd been off the track for quite a long time before his reappearance here at Doncaster last month, improved markedly when second at Hamilton last time out and seems to be running into form. So if he steps up again, he'd be a big threat. But I do think that Derulo was a few pounds well in.
Derulo then. In the 4.50 at Doncaster, as always, let's have a quick summary, Rory, if you'll swing us through your selections one more time.
I will. In the 1.45 at Salisbury, Sunny Future is the selection. The Cathedral Stakes, the big race of the day there at 4 o'clock. I'm sweet on the chances of Minna Lisa. The 4.15 at Doncaster can go the way of Cagnari, and Derulo will take an awful lot of beating in the 4.50.
Superb. Thank you very much, Rory. Good luck and enjoy on Sunday.
Thank you very much.
So there you go, the thoughts of Rory Delaghi on Sunday's racing. You'll hear it all on Racing Radio from 1.35. Stuart Beasley, James Millman and Mick Norton will be the team in the studio. It's Doncaster and Salisbury domestically, and Cork and Downpatrick over in Ireland. So plenty to look forward to. Do tune in for all of that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast, and enjoy Sunday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.